You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a vibrant spiritual community committed to individual and collective awakening through sacred teachings and practices, one God, one heart, many paths.
My name is Lisa Hewitt. It is my joy and honor to be with you. And as you know, Daniel Namot is with us this morning. So thank you. Yes, such a joy, such an honor. And I just want to invite everybody, before we go any further, to join me in prayer. Let's take a deep breath together. Beloved one, we give thanks for you, for this time together, for this sacred community, for each other. We open ourselves up and we turn towards your divine presence. We know that this time is holy and it's sacred. And we are grateful for your many blessings upon us today and every day. And together we say, Amen.
Lately I've been thinking about what motivates me to give a couple dollars to a stranger on the street, to hold the door, carry groceries, help a neighbor in need. When history repeats itself in headlines every day, solutions never big enough for problems that we face. As a man, as a dad, what difference can I make? Cause I know better than to think I'll be remembered for a favor or a quarter or a smile. Oh, but maybe before I return to sender, I can do one thing worthwhile. So I'm gonna try, I'm gonna try to raise a kind child. Sure would help if our boy went and got an MBA and took care of his artist mom and dad in their old age. But let's face it, Wall Street probably isn't in his DNA. But when his first grade teacher said she wanted us to know, it's Jude who always comforts any kid who sits alone. There's just so much pride my heart can take, my retirement can wait. Cause I know better than to think I'll be remembered for a fortune or a pension or a prize. Oh, but maybe before I return to sender, I'll have done one thing worthwhile. So I'm gonna try, I'm gonna try to raise a kind child. I don't want him to think the world is his to save. It's too much pressure anyway, it can't be done. I don't want him to think he has to be a saint, cause the truth is saints don't have any fun. Mostly I just hope my boy will come to understand no 401k or GPA can make a happy man. It's having roots, doing good, helping out where you can. So put down roots, do some good, take somebody's hand. And you'll know better than most what really matters, What makes living this life worthwhile? And there may come a day your own kids will remember how their granddad used to say with a smile that he raised. We raised a kind child. There's a little boy in my boy's class who, when they started school in kindergarten, he had just arrived in the United States and didn't speak a word of English, along with his parents and a baby, little adorable little baby brother. And so the four of them arrived in here in Orange County and didn't speak any English. And this little boy, call him Evan. I'm kind of too close to home to use his real name. But he struggled in school. The teacher talked to the kindergartners about how Evan didn't speak English yet, so he might struggle a little bit, so give him a little space, but he really did struggle, and Jude came home regularly with, Evan got sent to the principal again. You know, Evan threw some elbows, Evan got in a fight, you know, he was just acting out, which who wouldn't? You're a new country, new language, every face new, you have no idea what's going on. I mean, I don't know what's going on, and I'm 49. He was, you know, 6 and was, you know, for very good reason, befuddled, so it made sense, but it was a struggle for him. And one day his kindergarten teacher called us. It's the only fudge in that song is that it was not his first grade teacher who called. It was his kindergarten teacher. His first grade teacher then called later, but it was his kindergarten teacher who called and said, I wanted you to know that your boy is the kindest boy in kindergarten. She said he's always looking out for kids and finding them the crayon color they can't find and helping them find the bathroom if they're confused and lost, you know. But she said, today he really did something special. I was reading a book to all the class, and they were sitting on the rug, and when I finished the book, your son raised his hand and said, I think Evan did such a good job listening today that he should get an extra point. That's it. That's the whole act of kindness. And, of course, I started crying. And my wife looked at me and said, oh, please, you're not going to start crying. But I immediately thought of my bubby, my dad's mom, who was about as wide as she was tall, so about 4 feet in both directions. They never did a day of exercise in her life, and I definitely inherited that from her. And so about 4 feet, 4 feet tall, this teeny little tough-as-nails woman who used to take a bus, who stand outside, you know, summer and winter in Chicago and catch a bus to downtown Chicago and work in the tallest building in the world, the Sears Tower. But she was afraid of heights, so she never went past the third floor. In fact, as far as I know, she literally never went past the third floor in 30 years working for Sears. And I don't think she had a high school diploma, but she pushed a mail cart and did errands for people, and they kept her on, and they treated her well, and she treated them well. It was in those days when, you know, many more than now, companies treated employees like family for the long term. And I went to her retirement party, and people came and paid tribute to Betty. She was the first person in the office every morning and the last person to leave every night, and everybody loved her. She was always up for a chuckle. And she was the youngest of 13 kids, arriving all 13 of them with their parents from a little town in Poland. She used to half jokingly say, and I don't think she was joking, that their dad was a shoemaker, but they were too poor to afford shoes. So they arrived in the United States, not speaking a word of English, and I was with this guitar singing for my bubby on her deathbed about 8 or 9 years ago. Like I said, she was 98. I didn't say she was 98 when she died. I can attest to the fact that when she was on her deathbed, she was still proud of the fact that in kindergarten she started kindergarten in the United States, a little girl who had just arrived here, not speaking a word of English. And in second grade, she won the spelling bee. And for her, for 90 years, that was a point of pride. And when my boy spoke up for Evan, who didn't speak a word of English in kindergarten, it just reminded me of my bubby, and I told my boy this story of his great-grandmother, and how Evan, like my Bubby, like his great-grandmother, Evan might be the smartest boy in class, the sweetest boy, the funniest boy. He might have the greatest inventions. He might cure a disease. He might become a great doctor or lawyer. He might write a brilliant book. He might be the friendliest, funnest, most awesome kid in that class, and you just don't know yet. But I said, but what you just did today, here's what you did today. You spoke up for a boy who's having a hard time, who may have not until today heard his name spoken with a smile. He may not have had until today the entire class turn and look at him and smile, or the teacher say his name with absolutely nothing but kindness and appreciation. And you don't know what you just did for him, but I promise you, you did something. And it wouldn't surprise me if your great-grandmother had a moment in kindergarten or first grade when somebody paid attention to her for an extra 5 minutes. She was the youngest of 13. She didn't get, no way she got one-on-one attention with her parents. I don't even know how 13 kids works or whether you get your own zip code or what happens. So there's no way your Bubby got that kind of attention at home from with 12 brothers and sisters. Somebody might have spoken out for her, to her, said something kind like that. And it provided just the spark of self-confidence so that 2 years ago, 2 years later, she was the best speller in class. And you'll find out what Evan is able to do. But what you gave to him today is priceless, right? And if we think about, like I said in the meditation, I didn't actually intend for it to be such a perfect tie into Thanksgiving, but it kind of is. I think of the choir director in my little private Jewish grammar school. Choir was for fifth through eighth graders. This is a Jewish day school in Skokie, Illinois, where I grew up. And I wasn't supposed to be in the choir. My older brother was 3 years older. When we moved there, I started in third grade. He started in sixth grade, so he went into this little choir. You know, like 20, 25 kids, a small school, 25 kids a class. But I wanted to go sit in the choir room just to be in there because that's the way I'm wired. I always wanted to be around musicians. And Mrs. Metkowski was the choir director, and she didn't kick me out. Right? Week after week, one choir rehearsal a week, not like what Amy does, Christmas time, but week after week, Mrs. Metkowski let me sit in the back, and then I think, if I remember, closer and closer to the front and sing with the choir, even though I wasn't allowed to be there. And eventually she gave me a little solo. Not singing solo, a xylophone solo. It went like this. Doom, doom, doom. Doom, doom, doom. And I played those four little lines on my xylophone for the next 5 years. 6 years. I graduated eighth grade, never had missed a note on the xylophone on my little solo. And that was a lot of pressure on a third grader, but this is not to talk about the awards I should have won on xylophone. We're talking about, but Mrs. Metkowski said yes to having me sit in that classroom. Third and fourth grade when I wasn't supposed to be there, and I felt like I belonged. And, fast forward, how old was I in third and nine or something like that? So fast forward 40 years, I still remember it. I still remember that she let me, I used to make up harmonies. She never told me to stop. When I started singing along, she never told me to stop. So she made a space for me, and it, you know, in some sense cost her nothing, like Jude's little comment cost him nothing. But what it gave to me continues to reverberate, you know. As much as it sounds like this is all about me, it isn't all about me, because the truth is every single one of us in this room, and everyone we walk by on the street, and everyone in our family, everyone we've ever met, and the billions we've never met, are all performing tiny acts of kindness every day, for which there are no awards, there's no recognition, frequently there isn't even a thank you. Teachers and social workers know this well, and you know, nurses, they know this well, that the number of lives they touch that never boomerang back to tell them what they've done, right? But we all are teachers and nurses and social workers in that sense. One kind word, one help door, a dollar to somebody, a compliment to somebody. And it's a real thing. It's like you can scatter them around and they really don't cost anything. But if you think, just for a minute, I'm going to go to the piano and sing another song. If you think of the most precious little nuggets of those, they're worth way more than the person who gave them could ever imagine. They would long ago have forgotten saying that one little thing. I remember Becky Jones in high school saying, "Danny, look at those baby blues." My eyes, right? I had never been complimented on the color of my eyes before. She just tossed it off half jokingly, and I never forgot it. It was a point of pride. Becky, and she was a cute girl. Becky Jones. Becky Jones said, "I have pretty eyes." Right? For her, it was nothing. For me, it was something special. And we have all done that, whether we ever find out what we did or not. I've sung this song here before, and I'll tell you why I'm singing it in a minute. If this is my last song, if this is my final day, if tomorrow I'll be gone, what do I want to say? If this is my last song, if it's my time to go, when my body's moved on, what will I have to show? Oh, but fortune and fame, they scatter to the wind the things that make a name, just don't matter in the end. But is the world a little more peaceful? Oceans and skies a little more blue? Is humankind a little bit wiser about the good that we can do? Does the sun shine a little bit brighter where before there was only rain? If so, then I'm glad I came. Have I given hope to the hopeless? Has a hungry soul been fed? Has a child stood a little bit taller 'cause of something that I said? Have I left a little kindness? Have I eased a little pain? If so, then I'm glad I came. For that, I'm so glad I came. If this is my last song, what do I leave behind? What do I pass on if I am out of time? There was a conference of religious science churches, if you're not familiar with that is, or that now they call themselves Centers for Spiritual Living, a very similar theology to Unity. Not quite the same, but very similar. And I used to sing at this conference they had every year in Monterey area for 6 or 7 years, and it was a good gig for Danny. I mean, I just made a lot of money and got invitations to sing all over the country, and it was something I looked forward to, and I debuted the song One Power there, and it was 800 people in a kind of old historic barn type building, but amazing vibe and sound and grand piano, and loved that gig. And there was this cute little girl named Emily who was maybe 8 or 9 at the time when I first met her. And every year Emily would come right at me when I got there. "Daniel, can I help you sell CDs?" "Sure." So she would stand at my table, but while she was helping me sell CDs, and by the way, it's very, very good for business to have a cute little eight-year-old girl standing at your table. I discovered very quickly, go ahead and be overshadowed by the cute little eight-year-old girl because it's good for business. Anyway, it makes me sound like a terrible person. But anyway, but while she was helping me sell CDs, she would pepper me with questions. Daniel, I want to do that. I want to write a song. I want to sing. How do I do that? How did you write that song? How did you play piano? Where did you get a studio? How do you make an album? How do you release an album? Where did you get the CD made? What did you do? How did you perform that song? Why did you go high there instead of low? You know, that kind of thing. Just a thousand questions. And I just stood there and, you know, talked to her about how, and she said, I want to do that someday for a living. It's wonderful. So year after year, Emily would help. And then I stopped doing that gig, that conference, and I lost touch with Emily. And then, this is 2006 now, so I released the Water album. Some of you know, it has that song on it, last song. And I had pre-sold a lot of copies of the Water album. In fact, it was actually made by contributions from people, right? The day it came out, I had 1,500 or so CDs to mail out, right? So that was an expensive but exciting day at the post office, and you never know if anything is any good, ever. I thought it was good. I didn't know. I liked it. So I packaged up all those CDs in giant boxes and went to the post office and spent a fortune mailed out those records. And then you kind of hold your breath, right, to see whether people mail it back with, you know, hate mail or whether they're going to, you know, you just literally have no idea. All right, so 1 week later, I got an email. The email said, "Hello, Daniel. It's Emily. I don't know if you remember me, but I'm the little girl who asked you a million questions about how to make music for a living. And I wanted you to know that I'm in music school right now. I'm in college and majoring in music, and I am going to make a living in music. And you helped me so much. I just listened to your Water CD, which I pre-ordered, which I didn't realize, obviously. And I just listened all the way through, and I wanted to tell you that if you're wondering if a child stands a little bit taller because of something that you said, the answer is yes. Love, Emily." Right, so that was a little girl that I hadn't seen in 5 years, who I had done nothing but just be a decent human being. She was adorable and sweet, and why would I not answer a million questions, right, if I had the time? It cost me nothing, but for her, it planted a seed of what she is now still, to this day I know, is now teaching and performing. But actually, more significant is the gift she gave me. That email I received in 2006, and I still remember it. It still gets me emotional to think of that email. So her taking the 5 minutes to send that email changed my life, right? Gave me a feeling like what I had been doing mattered to a person, right? And in a way, it's more significant that it matters to a person than that it matters to a million. Do you know what I mean? It mattered to a person at that significant a level. As I said, most of us don't get that kind of feedback, and I don't normally get that kind of feedback, which is why it stands out so dramatically. So let me go to the mic for another 2 minutes and wrap up. So one of the ways that I feel like appreciating the good we've done and the good that's been done on our behalf, one of the really significant benefits for me anyway, this is all like a personal process for me, of questioning or not questioning, doubting or second guessing or not, the choices I've made over the years to arrive where I am, who I am, what I've done, and what I haven't done. I mean, I moved to L.A. to make music for a living in 1998. Then I moved to L.A. specifically so that I could swim with the sharks. You know, I could move to where the music business is. I moved to West Hollywood. And everybody you're hearing on the radio, at least in the pop world, was probably my neighbor within six blocks. I mean, they were right around there. That's where the record labels are, the publishers are, the artists and the producers. Everybody was there, or still is. And I pulled off a miracle. during the 7 years I lived in West Hollywood. The miracle was I met none of them. I avoided them like it was a strategy. Instead of meeting them, knocking on doors, getting what would have been inevitable thousands of rejections, you know, along the way to maybe a yes or here or there, I was on the road singing One Power or last song or the sacred love songs that we've done a couple today. I was out there doing something that was indefinable and unexplainable, and there was no niche in the music business for it, and there's never been a radio station, there's no Grammy, there's no Sirius XM station, for God's sake, and they have like 6,000 stations. You know, there was never a place for it except the places where I was invited to go sing, and I was always out of town. I was never walking the streets and knocking on doors at music publishers in West Hollywood or in Beverly Hills next door. So I made no inroads whatsoever into the music business that I had ostensibly moved to L.A. to make inroads into. So now I'm 49, I have to look back and say, what the hell did I just do? How did I manage to avoid the entire music industry for 20 years in Southern California? As a performer, for God's sake, it's not like I was working at Starbucks and not singing. I've been singing. This is it. Performance number 7,000. You know what I mean? It never ends. I keep singing, but I would keep doing this thing. And I couldn't even tell you what this thing is that I do. Every time I get on an airplane, someone sees me working on a song on my laptop. You know, I'm writing and producing all the time. Never not working on music ever for 22 years now. Ever. So somebody sees me on a plane and says, oh, are you a songwriter? Yeah, I am. I'm a professional songwriter. It's been my full-time job for 20 years. Wow, that's cool. Have I heard anything you've done? No. Probably not. Maybe accidentally. You know? Oh, well, what kind of music is it? Oh, geez. It's pop music, I guess. It's spiritual. No, but I'm not Christian, so it's not, no. It's sort of inspirational, positive, I guess. It's I don't know. Never mind. Never mind. If I have the chance to play them a song on headphones, I sometimes take 3 minutes, and then they're like, oh, my God, it's beautiful. Oh, I was moved. But how do you tell them? It's emotional, I guess. It's personal. I don't know what to tell you. And that's been 20 years. I don't know. You know, everybody's supposed to have an elevator pitch. 20 years later, this is as polished as my show gets, and this is as smooth as my answer gets to what kind of music do you make, right? But if you frame it in the context of all those little and large acts of kindness that have been done for me, and all the little or large acts of kindness I have committed, whether knowingly or unknowingly, right? Emily's just a little symptom, just a little drop in the bucket. And Mrs. Mikowski's just a drop in the bucket of support and encouragement towards me, just like what Jude dropped into the bucket for Evan in his school, right? Just little, these are little drops. But here's how it reframes the concept of regret or rewriting history or winding back the clock or wondering what you've done or whether you arrived where you thought you would or should arrive is, do I have the audacity to unwrite all those good things done for and by me? All the good I've ever done has come where I was in that moment. All the good I've ever done was because I put myself there and to say that kind word. One last little story is I sang at a little tiny church in Las Vegas years ago. And they gave out roses to first-timers. And I was a first-timer because I was singing there. And just because I'm a smart aleck, I can't help it, you know, I raised my hand. Anybody a first-timer, I raised my hand. And then they handed me a rose. Every first-timer gets a rose. And I'm like, well, I shouldn't have done that. They paid a couple bucks for this rose. Now I'm standing here like an idiot in the back of the room holding a rose. I'm supposed to go up there and sing. I'm not going to put it in my teeth. I'm not going to put it on the piano. I wasted the church. I mean, what am I going to do with this rose? And then just as I'm thinking this, a mom walks in with her little girl in her hand, right? Wearing a little cute little dress, and they walk in, and I look at them, and I walk up to the little girl just spontaneously, and I say, "Would you like a rose?" And she says, "Yes," and the little girl takes the rose from me, and I'm like, "Well, that was good. That was a nice outcome. Okay." And after the service, the mother and daughter come up to me, and the mother has tears in her eyes, and she says, She said, I have belonged to this church for several years, but I haven't been here in a year. Because a year ago, our son was diagnosed with cancer. And 6 months ago, he died. And I have not had it in me to show my face here since that diagnosis. This was the first day we were coming back into this room. And the first thing that happens when we walk in the door is a stranger walks up to my little girl and hands her a rose and says, I'm so glad to see you. Welcome. Here's a beautiful rose for a beautiful little girl. She said, I can't tell you what that did. She said, I don't know why you thought of doing that, but I can't tell you what that meant to me. Right? Cost me nothing. Accidental in some sense. But we have all done those things a million times. So far be it from me to rewrite a history that put that rose in that little girl's hand that day. That was more important. Sorry. The voice in my head of my dad says, you know, that and a quarter will get you a gumball. I'm a child of lawyers. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm trying to, you know, pay bills in Orange County. You guys know what it is. But a part of me knows that the good done for and by me over the years actually outweighs by far any balance sheet or Grammy or award, like the Kind Child song says. And I would encourage you, if you have any questions or doubts, maybe you don't, maybe I'm projecting, but it seems like it's a common thing to say, oh, if I had only not done that, or if I had only made that phone call, or why didn't I ask her out a second time, or why didn't I apply for that job, or I should have tried to build that business. Why didn't I move to New Zealand? What was I thinking? This isn't how I was supposed to be. This wasn't where it was supposed to end up. I would encourage you to shade that story with the fact that along the way, thousands of good acts, beautiful moments have been committed by you that would not have been committed, and thousands of acts of kindness that you would never have received, thousands of moments of beauty you would never have experienced and witnessed. In other words, it's possible. Maybe I'm wrong. It's possible. There is no such thing as a detour. There has never been a wrong turn. We arrive where we were meant to arrive. We do what we are meant to do. The good we're meant to give and receive is all laid out before us. It just takes a couple minutes to realize it and appreciate it. And to me, that is a high purpose of a week of Thanksgiving.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.